You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 13th September. Praveen Gordhan has passed away. Rest in peace, good sir. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we've got Scott Glow from PSG Old Oak, the Discovery Trading Update. I've got to say, I prefer their updates because they're a little easier to understand. And then PGM Miners. Time to buy, time to wait, and maybe some nuances. Anglo Platinum, man, that 73% that they're still going to unbundle is going to cause pain. James Rainbow, he's from Schroders UK. Future financial advice in a changing digital world. And thoughts from me in a week away from the holidays. And maybe we need to sometimes turn off the screens to be better at our investors. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. FirstRand sees higher debt review activity, even amongst those not in arrears. The increase in its retail debt counselling portfolio means potentially higher default rates that could hurt its credit loss ratio. Business Day, Sibanye's losses over 18 months stretch to 44 billion rand. Miner to slash US platinum output, but CEO says all is well positioned to benefit from a recovery in prices. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.75%, the Nasdaq was 1% higher. The East mostly green, Sydney the exception, down 0.2%. Tokyo, sorry, also down now, 0.9%. Hong Kong up 1.2% and Tencent up 0.6%. Commodities, green, gold, new all-time high, $2,594. Brent, $72.22. Platinum, $989. Palladium, $1,050. The Rand is $1,774. Bitcoin, $58,000. Top 40 opening call, 280 points to the upside. That's almost 0.4%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Scott Glow from PSG Old Oak. Scott, appreciate the early morning time. As I said in the intro there, the Discovery trading update. The Discovery results, I mean, insurance results always hurt my head. Discovery take it to a new level completely. The trading update's easier. A lot of moving parts, however. What was your take from the update and the business more generally?
Yeah, good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the listeners. Yeah, it seems like, I mean, this is sort of a trend now. I mean, it seems, and maybe it's too early to call this one swallow a summer, but this light might just be the light at the end of the tunnel for South African companies and not the oncoming train. Because we've seen, you know, quite a few of our banks and insurance now, this case, Discovery, bringing out better than expected results. And, you know, when we look at something like Discovery, they started the year off, you know, just shy of 144. Then they signed in the NHI bill and, you know, it went down 107 Rand. What was it down? Down 25% mid, it's called May this year. Up 8% now. So, I mean, let's just delve into it. Just quickly look at it. When I look at the broad, because remember, we're only expecting results on the 19th of September.
Yeah.
You're looking at HEPS that's going to grow anything between 4 and 9%. And what does that tell us? It tells us that you know, when we look at the expected and I use Refinitiv estimates, they even if they come in at the lower end, this lower end will beat expectations. Hmm. That is really, really good. When we look at the broader side, South Africa doing well. I mean, this is where I'm saying that the light in the hotel. The South African businesses are doing really well. Discovery Invest, Discovery Insure, both of them really, really doing well. Discovery Bank, which they forecast is going to be running losses for many, many years, they are continuing to reduce these losses, actually beating what they forecasted themselves. UK still struggling. But that's sort of a trend for most of these companies that's dealing with the UK, where, you know, Ping An, you know, the China side, I mean, really, really looking good. Overall, I'm not an investor, so I can actually say this really, really good. Very, very, and a positive result.
Yeah, I take the point. And some of them in Ping An is small, but almost doubling in size. I mean, that's a big, big number. So let's go to the other side of the market where things are quite different. Platinum group metals, PGMs, almost become a swear word on the Twitters. We saw the Sibanye numbers yesterday. I mentioned in the intro there, what, 44 billion loss over 18 months. We saw the Anglo Platinum accelerated book build on Tuesday, which went well, but wasn't good for the price. Your take on PGMs. Is this opportunity, is this a place to lose our fingers if we try to get too bold?
I would not be short. Let's just put it out there. I mean, okay, you mentioned all these counters. Anglo-American Platinum, year-to-date performance, minus 45%. You know, Northern Platinum, minus 33%. Sibanye-Stillwater, minus 38%. Even Impala Platinum is sort of bucking the trend, minus 15% for 2024 thus far. So, I mean, it's a very, very difficult market to be in. If you've been in it, you clearly had an extra few platinum hairs or gray hairs. And unlike that, the other shiny metal, you know, the gold, they really not doing well. Why am I, you know, carefully optimistic, or like I said, carefully bullish? You know, when we look at the actual kind of forecast, you know, and here I'm looking at the World Platinum Investment Council, they already mentioned last year that when we look at the supply and demand, we had quite a bit of a deficit in 2023. And I looked at this and I went like, wow, this is interesting. Look at the platinum, you know, palladium, platinum prices. That did not reflect a deficit. And as we sit here, the new report came out, they're mentioning that the deficit this year is going to be even larger, if they're right. They're talking about jewelry demand that is expected to jump purely because, you know, the gold price is as high as that. People will buy more jewelry. And I buy the EV struggle. But remember, I don't think EV is going to make a huge difference in the next few years. So when we look at the actual underlying PGM prices, they are pretty much back to their prices, you know, they started the year off. Mm-hmm. So they did have a bit of a recovery, yet the actual miners, the Amplatses, the Implatses, the Northerns, Sibanye Stillwaters, they did not see the same recovery. And I do agree. I mean, you started off the show, you know, referring to Sibanye Stillwaters, you know, update. They are actually optimistic that with the recent recovery, in the underlying process, that they could see a bit of a recovery as well. So if you're asking me, am I bullish at current levels or bearish at current levels, I would definitely be leaning towards bullish.
And is Anglo Platinum a special case because of that overhang from Anglo American? I mean, they sold 5.3% this week, snap, no problem, but they've got 73% still to go.
Yes. I mean, that's unnatural. And I love these unnatural circumstances because remember that, you know, a share price that dropped 45%, you usually lean towards, did we see, you know, really bad results?
Yeah.
Relatively, they did not have, you know, worse results. Actually, they were looking pretty solid. But you mentioned it. I mean, if you dump a massive amount of shares onto a market, you get an unnatural drop in the share price. Wait for it to trickle out and, watch the share price afterwards.
We'll leave it there. That's Skalk Lowe, PSG Old Oak. Skalk, always appreciate the early morning insights. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. The local PGM sectors, the white metal, it is trading higher. It was looking bleak over last week and early this week, but it has recovered a bunch. Is it time to buy those PGM miners? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
My name is Farza Masani. I'm the co-founder and CEO of the crypto exchange Valor. This week, I'm on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast and exploring a somewhat philosophical subject. Is Bitcoin an instrument of freedom? And if so, what will that freedom look like? It's an important subject for all of us. We've got problems with our current financial system and society at large. Join us.
Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
chatting with James Rainbow. He's from Schroders UK. James, appreciate the time today. Let's start off with sort of financial advice and trends we're seeing. And one thing that, I don't know if it's a fair reflection or maybe it's just a overly anecdotal, but we're seeing, obviously, financial advisors age and truthfully age out of the system, retiring, you know, spending time in their retirement. Are we seeing a new generation of financial advisors sort of filling their spaces?
I think this is one of the key questions that we're all grappling with as an industry, which is none of us are getting any younger, but financial advisors, generally speaking, are at a later stage in their career, and we are struggling to attract new entrants into the profession. You know, I don't think that this is an acute issue for right now, but I think it is something that we are increasingly going to have to deal with.
And part of the challenge, I suspect, is that the generations coming through, I'm thinking millennials, I'm thinking the Gen Zs and the like, they're probably looking to get their advice somewhere else. And I mean, some of that's probably TikTok, which truthfully is a terrifying concept.
I think to a certain extent, the rise of influencers, or how they're described, I think is sort of helpful and unhelpful in equal measure. I don't love the idea of widespread, unregulated advice by anecdote. I think, though, if it drives people to get professional help from qualified people, then maybe actually it's not the worst thing in the world. I do think, though, you have to assume that a new generation is going to behave fundamentally differently with their money than the previous generation. And I'm not sure that that's the case. I think that the issues around trust and reassurance that is given by people taking or developing a relationship with an advisor, you know, I think are going to be felt as acutely by the next generation as this one.
I take your point. And perhaps it's almost just a sort of shifting. And as I'm thinking of TikTok, which is not a platform I'm massively au fait with, but the right person on TikTok, you know, a millennial, for example, talking to their cohorts can actually be a benefit and get people to start perhaps thinking about investing, thinking about their retirement, whereas otherwise they wouldn't be.
I think that's entirely correct. I mean, I think that the more that we can drive people to engage, and then once they've engaged, to go and look for appropriate help to try and navigate what is inevitably a very complex backdrop of regulation, tax, many, many different products and services to choose from, then I would say that's definitely a good thing. A more engagement, more engaged people is something that I think we should all encourage.
Yeah, 100%. If we change tax slightly to discretionary fund management, DFMs, that market is obviously undergoing changes as well. What sort of trends have you spotted in the UK that could perhaps be sort of brought to South Africa for the sector?
Well, I think certainly the advisors and DFMs that I've been speaking to in South Africa, the trends are very similar. It is quite possible that the trend has a little more duration in the UK, but the direction is really the same. If you think about what has started this, it is advisors focusing their time and resources on what they're good at, which is giving advice, financial planning, making sure that people have a clear destination in mind and are maintaining that path. Fund management, investment selection is not typically in that skill set. It requires significant resource. And, you know, most advice businesses that I speak to just don't have the resource available to commit to growing out a discretionary manager at scale. And so partnering with one, accessing their expertise on behalf of their clients, it feels to me to be a positive development versus simply trying to do yourself without the necessary resource and framework in place to do it.
I take your point. And part of the challenge, and in the note you put out, you talk about the choice paradox, is that, you know, if I go back, oh, I don't know, 20 or 30 years ago, there was a lot to invest in, but it was a much, much smaller universe, not only in terms of assets, but in terms of range and the like. And that really is potentially a stumbling block for the new people coming into the market, but a really good point for financial advisors and for DFMs. I mean, they're the experts in the space.
I completely agree with that. I mean, I think it is an accurate reflection to say that the world has got much, much more complicated in almost any way that you look at it. Mm. And so making sure that we have specialists in their field that are helping clients achieve their goals, I can't see that that's going to be anything other than a good outcome.
Yeah, more is better, but managing that more perhaps is the real challenge. We'll leave it there. That's James Rainbow. He's Schroders UK. Appreciate the time today.
The Property Pod. The South African Property Owners Association convention took place at Sun City last week, with the who's who of the country's commercial property sector gathered for SOPOA's flagship annual event. The Property Pod was there, and in this week's episode on MoneyWeb, we feature three executives who were at the convention, including SOPOA CEO Neil Gopal, Durban Chamber CEO Palisa Pili, and newly appointed SOPOA President Itumeleng Motibeli.
The Property Pod.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
So some thoughts from me after taking a week off last week. I top up Durban by nature, best there is, and swims in the sea, always great. But markets, I had my screens off all the time. Didn't peek once. It was usually a couple of times I will go and have a peek. This time I absolutely didn't look the entire week. And then come the weekend, I'm back from holiday and I want to know kind of what's happened. So I go and check in on some of the stocks over the weekend. And it was quite a weird experience. I mean, ShopRite, I go and I have a look at the sort of what's the price movement been over the week. Not very much. Have a look at the results. Yeah, not too bad. Maybe a smidgen light in some places. And then you go look at the sort of the intra-week commentary and price action, and it was completely and absolutely wild. And sort of the more I did it, and the more I was looking at just the week-on-week share price relative to the noise during the week, it becomes abundantly clear that something which we all intuitively know, markets are noisy, very, very noisy. And some thoughts on that. I mean, it was really a revelation to sort of in the quietness of a weekend, being able to read up and get a sense of what had happened without that noise out there. And the noise, if anything, is going to perhaps force us to make decisions. Let's go to the ShopRite story. The share price was under pressure. Commentators were saying the results were light. There was certainly space if we were too close to make rash decisions, particularly if we are a long-term shareholder. As someone, and I've held ShopRite for almost two decades, and this is just a single example, of course, because those results were out last week. As a proper long-term shareholder, what's happening truthfully day to day, even week to week, month to month, is of less importance. They are a premier grocery retailer, not just in South Africa, but globally. And I think for traders as well, if you are a shorter term trader, being that close to the market and watching the tick chart and the 1 minute chart, if anything, it's going to force us into mistakes. It's going to force us into doing things which are emotional rather than a good idea for our position or our portfolio. For me as a trader, I'm typically looking actually at weekly charts, but even daily charts, and making decisions, and I always talk around it, the making those decisions during the quiet time, i.e. when markets are closed, when you're not being buffered by noise, by social media, by prices moving valiantly. Now, sometimes we need to respond. Yeah, it's sometimes, and I'm thinking here, when the Steinhoff story broke, when the African bank story broke, there are times when we need to respond quickly, and we need to respond sort of on the spur of the moment. But those times, and there were two examples, and I'm struggling to think of others. More broadly, I think we can often spend a little time right at the screen, and I think our portfolios, whether trading or long term, will benefit from a more reflective response rather than a panicked response. That's it for today. I was chatting with Kobus Lutz from Pan African Resources yesterday on results as their production increased. The all-in sustained costs ticked higher, but as some of those other projects start coming through, Evander, the Mintails and the like, that should pull all-in sustained costs down. And they are looking for, I mean, gold production up quite nice and chunky as those new projects come in. And as I mentioned up at the top of the show, gold all-time highs, almost at 2,600. We asked you if gold miners were still worth investing in. Almost two-thirds of you said yes, more upside coming. And you know what? You're right. Gold's up more than $50 since that poll went live. The rest was split between gold needs to kick higher and those of you who say, I have taken my profits already. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a review and an awesome rating in your podcatcher of choice, and we'll chat again Monday. PwC Bank Analysis.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.